Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Business from the Bass Boat Podcast, brought to you by Rec Lending on the Serious Angler Network. And guys, today we've got a great show lined up. First things first, though, I do want to congratulate Mr. Ken Ma on a win on Clear Lake. Close win from that perspective, but just cannot believe the heater streak that Mr. Ken is on. So we will need to get him on one of our show platforms here shortly, because good gosh, he's unstoppable right now out west, and it's cool to see that dominance happen. He closes really well in tournaments. It's really good to see. And it's such a great dude who is pushing for more of a professional level tournament fishing out west. So got to appreciate that. But today's show, talking the other side, or sometimes forgotten side of tournament fishing. I shouldn't say forgotten, but there's sometimes I feel like there's a little bit of a lack of respect. And so that's just my take on things. But the kayak world is something that, you know, I really don't know a ton about. I've obviously the show with Bailey and with our kayak fishing weekly show. It's kind of been interesting to learn and hear about the tournaments and how it all works in the kayak world. And we've done this in the past, but this is more so just an update, I think, to understand the kayak industry a little bit further. So without further ado, we're bringing in Mr. Bailey Egbert of the Serious Angler Podcast. What's going on, Bailey?
What up, dude?
Not much, man. Not much at all. Just making it all happen in this crazy, crazy life that we live.
Some way, somehow fitting in the small sliver of a calendar opening we got.
That's exactly right. You know, everyone's like, man, it's must be nice. This. It's like, man, it's a Saturday morning and we're cranking out a podcast because we got to get one up Monday.
That's right, buddy. Dude, it's I feel like the struggle nowadays isn't even like the tasks that we have anymore. It's the fact of like trying to find the time to actually get them done within our calendar. Like it's unbelievable. Yeah.
It's the most precious resource, dude. Like for real. Out of everything in the world. Like time is the one that is the hardest to figure out in my book right now, anyway.
Yeah, you know, my dad's always said stuff like that where it's, you know, as you get older, you know, money's money and things are things, but time is like obviously the most precious. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I want a bow, I want this, whatever. Like, and then as I'm starting to get further down the road, I'm like, hey, you know, maybe he's right. I just need time, man.
Dude, dead on. Like that's, yeah, I agree 100%. And I think that is part of my guiding light going forward is to figure out the time stuff. But, dude, anyways, one, I first congratulate you. This was a couple weeks ago, but on your fantastic finish on Murray, that was great to see from a kayak perspective. But I guess maybe that's a good place to start. That was a Bassmaster kayak event, correct?
Yeah, it was actually a record-breaking event. It was the biggest one Bassmaster's ever had with 258 anglers. So it was a pretty big event. Yeah.
That is a lot of kayaks on the water. I mean, that's insane, man.
It was a lot, but I was actually surprised. I don't know if it's just, you know, dominated by a lot of the southern anglers that they're maybe more afraid of the clear water, or they like some of the, maybe they were kind of deterred with some of the warming, dirtier water that Murray had, because it's kind of like half and half the lakes kind of split up, at least the week we were there. But I think at most I saw at ramps was 5 or 6 people. I launched with maybe 6 or 8 each morning of the tournament. And then actually like where I was fishing, I think I saw 2 kayaks max a day.
Oh, wow.
Pretty nice. Yeah, it was cool.
That's awesome. Now is just Murray. I've never been anywhere in the Carolinas fishing wise. Does it fish pretty big in general, like in boat events as well too? Do you feel like that guys can spread out in that place?
I can't really speak for the boating side. I mean, looking at, you know, like the elite event that was there last year, it looks like basically there was a one boat for every single point that the lake had. But right. Again, it's a different time of year, but, from my understanding, it can spread out pretty well. There's, to my knowledge of it, I mean, which is, you know, that was my first time there. It didn't seem like there was a community hole, if you will. I think the community hole on there is just basically the millions of docks that it has. But obviously it's known for cane piles and brush piles, and it has eelgrass, coontail, things like that. I think there's enough of it around that it spreads people out, at least from my knowledge, though. They're probably a local sitting here that's saying, hey, an idiot. You know, there's something, you know, but I know the creeks, some of the up lake stuff where we got into the river system, that was pretty crowded, at least from a launch standpoint, but obviously not everybody's fishing the same stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
And going off of your hat, first of all, we need to figure out how to get some of those hats around with this in today's controversy of live scope and forward facing sonar. The Scope and Hope hat, for those of you listening to MP3 that Bailey's on, is fresh. Like, it's got some old school camo, big old sign that says Scope and Hope. And so tell me a little bit about that, just because in my opinion, or what you kind of have seen in how I've always viewed kind of the kayak stuff traditionally, was like, man, you can take these kayaks in places you could never get a bass boat in on these bodies mm-hmm. of water. You can go way back up a creek. You can do some crazy things, go under culverts and stuff that you just can't quite do in a bass boat, especially a full size bass boat. So, now you're seeing maybe a little bit more, just like in the regular world of this electronics dominating events. Mm-hmm. But what's your take on that? How was it on Murray from that perspective? How many guys were out, you know, forward facing sonaring versus maybe fishing shallow traditionally?
Yeah. Well, first I'll give the hat shout out to my boy, Jake Angulus. I probably butcher his last name, but we talk a bunch over social, and they were fishing this event, him and like Ryan Nye, Nick Audi. There's some of the Northeastern boys that are hammers, and they're really good at catching them shallow, but they're all pretty damn good at scoping them too. And I show up to registration for that event on Murray, and I run to them and say hello, and I see they're all wearing these Scope and Hope hats, and I'm like, dude, where can I get one of these? These are pretty cool. And they sent me one. It's pretty dang cool. So if people are curious, I'll send you their contact, or if you guys have them on social, reach out and they'll hook you up. But I still think the traditional methods, like anti-electronics type of deals, still doing very well and very prevalent in the kayak fishing space, because the guy that won the event didn't have forward facing. I think he at most had side imaging and caught him deep as well, which like was super cool. I was the guy in the back of the room at awards when he was like, you don't need live scope or a motor to win. And I'm like, hell yeah, brother. Like, I was like he's fired up with it. Yeah, yeah. He smoked us without it, man. But there's definitely some tournaments where guys are using it. I mean, it's no secret that the tech has unlocked, you know, what fish are really doing, the ability to learn and all that mumbo jumbo that is honestly regurgitated at this point. But it's prevalent in the kayak fishing space. I think there's a lot of people that have it that are, I think right now it's hurting them, because you definitely need to be a lot more strategic in the kayak side of things when you're using it, because it can really send you down. When you're in a boat and you're moving faster, it can send you down a rabbit hole of distraction. But in a kayak, when you're not moving as fast, it can waste so much of your time. So if you can learn how to use it, like if you're already an offshore guy, like I was before I even had forward facing sonar, you can apply it pretty easy. But there's some guys that are applying it perfectly that fish shallow already. Like they put on, you know, a landscape with Mega Live, but I think it's perspective with Garmin. Like they're already fishing shallow and they just use that as a means to, you know, find something here or there, make specific casts. But I think the guys that are, at least from my personal opinion, that are doing really well with it are using it as a hybrid. Like you have a plan shallow and you have a plan deep, and it's maybe you're picking off a few different fish or getting a limit first thing with forward facing sonar offshore, and then you're going up shallow to try to call. You don't see too many events right now that are dominated
that are by just forward facing sonar. Yeah.
But I mean, there's definitely guys doing it though, for sure. You're seeing that cross into it. And I will say it's a lot harder to use forward facing sonar in a kayak than it is in a boat.
That's the first thing I thought. Is like,
an orchestra, honestly. Because like me and the Hobie, I have a 360 drive, which for folks who may not know, like you can change your pedal 360 degrees so I can go like directly sideways if I need to. Like it's pretty sick, at least from the kayak side of things, it's sick. So I have the steering of the kayak, which takes my one hand to do. And then my other hand steers my hand steering for forward facing sonar, which can turn my transducer. And then I'm also trying to, you know, fish. Have my bait in my hand. Like, so it's a whole orchestra to try to stay on and then always have it in picture. Like any lick of wind and you are, it is quite the hand-eye coordination to do it and do it well in the kayak. So it could definitely hurt you.
Dude, I mean, that's the first thing I thought of is like, okay. I mean, the big thing with forward facing for the boat side of things, it has made things so much more efficient, right? Like every cast is hitting stuff that you're wanting to do. And you just get good naturally doing it with lining things up with your foot and using your trolling motor. And then all your hands are free. But my buddy Ty and I were talking after you had done well on Murray, and Ty Faber's fishing all the opens and doing well. He just finished. He struggled a little bit the second day on Santee and ended up in the 80s, but he's still sitting in a good place to have a chance at the elites right now. So that's cool. But we were talking about it and we're like, we got to figure out a way like to get this thing on a foot pedal on a kayak, just like some sort of controller with a foot, because I feel like it would be so dang efficient. Is there anyone doing that? Or is it all guys as far as forward facing, kind of the same deal as far as like the crappie kind of older style of aiming and then making a cast with your other hand?
I want to say there's a couple guys doing it with the foot pedal that have the bow mounted motors. Like there's some guys that have like the motor guide. There's some guys that have like a whole, they modified like a Fortrex to get on the front of their kayak. So I think Jake, the guy that actually gave me his hat, I don't know 100%, but I thought I saw on a Bassmaster image because they followed him around, I think the first day. I think he's got a legitimate like boat foot pedal that he has on his new canoe, which is a more open kayak on the front that he uses to control the scope with his foot, I think. I could be wrong. That could be simply just steering for the kayak, but 95% I would say are doing what I do, and they have a handle on the side that has like, you know, the sniper marines, the different things like that, that right, you're able right. to then swivel with your hand to change that. So if there's a way to do it, I mean, the only issue is like, it's a balance thing, you know, cause majority of the time you're sitting down, and if you're standing up in a kayak, it's very hard to pick up one leg because, you know, obviously the whole kayak will rock to one side, you know? So there's definitely the difficulty there, but I think if there's a way to make it more hands-free and be able to turn that live, like there's a big opportunity there.
Right. Right. No, I think so too. And, mm-hmm. It's just an efficiency thing, right? More than anything, but it's cool to know that winner was fishing offshore without it. And I think that's awesome to hear and see that kind of a thing. And, I think that's just less and less going to occur, right? Especially in the boat space of maybe that happening, but it still can happen. Like, and I think there's times still even now with this technology where you spend a lot of time having it help you maybe find that hard spot, but then you're not necessarily throwing at a specific fish, right? It's like, hey, I'm just going to keep hitting that hard spot. And that I feel like is where people, I think, maybe go a little too far on the naysaying of the technologies, because they're like, well, it's, you know, you're hitting every single fish and all this stuff, but it's not always that case. It might be to find the brush pile and make a more efficient cast, but it's not like it's targeting a specific fish every time. And so it's kind of anyways, I mean, like you said, it's been so much argument and regurgitation of this topic, but
yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100% there. There's probably more times than not that I'm more using it to make a more accurate cast than I am actually targeting a specific fish. Mm-hmm. Two different use cases was, you know, at least from a personal standpoint, state championships that we had here in New York, I was chasing rogue fish, rogue smallmouth out in the middle of the freaking lake in 60 foot of water. That's obviously targeting specific fish.
Right. But
then when I won the New York Invitational on Oneida in October, I didn't see a single freaking fish that I casted at. It's there was these rock piles that are in the middle of these grass flats that I'm using, but they're so small, like the size of my desk. So these smallmouth will hang on the edge in that grass, so you can't see them on there. I'm using it just to make a specific cast. I'm lining up, making the cast, and then I'm not even looking at my forward. I'm looking at my rod tip. Like that's all it is. So there's different use cases. It's more like I say a lot of people use it as a more dialed in 360, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. Pinpointing a pinpointing version of a 360 or something to make that specific. And that's been, I would say 75% of the time when I'm fishing with forward facing sonar, I'm using it in that manner more so than I am on a specific fish. And yeah, I'm going to watch if a specific fish comes off of a piece of cover and pay attention and try and catch that fish. But a lot of the times it's to throw at the structure for me anyway. So totally agree there. So with the kayak space on, you know, the first event from Bassmaster on Lake Murray. So what are the, I know there's a couple of different leagues on the net from the national tour. Like what's like the, what would be the equivalent of the Bassmaster Elite Series or the BPT? What are kind of that top tier when it comes to the kayak space?
I think right now it's shifting because it used to be the Hobie Bass Open Series. And I still think, at least as of right now, I would call it the Hobie Bass Open Series is like your elites in regard to, I don't know, because it's a tough question because I don't want to take anything away from the Bass Pro Tour guys because obviously those are legends of the sport. And then some, obviously you got Becker and Elton Jones Jr., some young hammers. So it's, I think there is a shift going on right now though where kayak anglers at least used to look at Hobie Bass Open Series as the one trail to go fish the best against the best.
Right.
And I still think it's there, but it's fading and it's slowly starting to change into the Bassmaster Kayak Series. And I think one, that's because there's been a lot of changes with Hobie year after year. Entry fees are going up, payouts are going down, where it's like your ROI for that series is kind of like anglers are looking at Bassmaster where, you know, the winner for Murray won over 13 grand, which at most you could win with a Hobie in the past was 10. And even now you can barely, even if you get close to maxing out, win 10 grand on a Hobie series. So people are looking at, I think Bassmaster also just having the namesake and being affiliated with the organization
totally
has the biggest upside across the board. So I think like your epitome for anglers fishing the best against the best by the end of this season, I think it'll all change to Bassmaster.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
I think so. And then also because it's tied in, you know, the championship is Classic Week. So there's a lot of buzz around that. And it's at first it started as basically no one even realized it was going on. Like I fished the first one and no one really cared. And not saying that they even still do, but there's definitely more people that are paying more attention to it and putting some more respect to the name anyway during that week. And you get some more attention and I think year after year, if Bass keeps improving the way they do, they made a big improvement signing on Steve Owens, who's one of the greatest guys I've seen in the kayak side, but also an incredible tournament director. Not saying that Hobie BOS doesn't, because they have AJ McCorder over there, who's one of the best for the sport and really helped improve the tournament side. But I just think with Bass and anglers, when you year over year, I think there's going to be so much more value in fishing the Bassmaster side simply because of the media output and the different, you know, reach that you can have efficiently.
Right. I mean, they've been the pinnacle for a really long time as far as just bass fishing tournament coverage, everything. And so I agree from an upside perspective, that makes the most sense to me. And it was interesting a couple of years ago, I think maybe this was just 2 years ago or something. We had this conversation. It may have been on air or off air, but you had just said, hey, like, you know, their Bass isn't doing all that good, you know, or maybe they're not growing, you're not seeing the numbers. And now you kind of see this paradigm shift, which it just kind of makes sense for that to play out in my head anyway, with Bass being who they are and kind of the head honcho in a lot of ways in the tournament world.
I think the whole entire reason for that shift for Bass was bringing on Steve Owens. I think he turned that around because they were doing some things prior to Steve Owens that were like, kayak anglers, like, why? Like, why are you making these changes? Like, there was just certain things you could, the guy prior to it, I don't even know his name, but essentially that team treated this as like, we're just doing this to do this. You know, we don't really care.
It check a box.
Yeah, it's exactly what it felt like. And so a lot of anglers didn't care. And that's really where Hobie was the focal point. And I still think anglers would keep fishing the Hobie series, but, man, they brought on Steve and he just brought, he had so much expertise in the kayak side. He's run a lot of local trails, has so much respect in the space that people were just like, they saw it happening and reflecting on the national circuit for Bassmaster. And that's why it's, I think it's garnered so much more attention. You know, he's been the voice for kayak anglers within Bassmaster. So it's now, that's going to become like the quote unquote pro trail. And yeah. I hate the term pro right now in kayak still, but
I hate it in bass fishing too. I don't consider for fishing a Toyota series. I don't consider that pro, but they call you a pro when you walk across the stage. Like, I mean, yeah. it's
very loosely thrown around now.
right. Pro fish. I mean, there's guys on Fishing Bass Nation and local stuff that consider themselves pros, but anyways,
like tournament enthusiast is what I prefer.
right. Go get your bass heads, man. We call them bass heads. Like,
this. Yeah, there
you go. But anyways, so how is it structured with Bassmaster then? Can you fish one of these? Do you have to fish all of them? What's the structure on the kayaks Bassmaster? And is there a sponsor, a main sponsor for it? Is it a series that's titled by something?
Yeah. So it's actually, kind of cool, which at first it didn't really make sense, but it does make sense now. It's sponsored by Yamaha Right Waters.
Oh, which, very cool.
So obviously having that conservation mind to it. And then what's making more sense now is Yamaha just purchased Torquedo. So it kind of all like starting to make,
you're like, why was Yamaha in the kayak space? Like, what are they doing here?
Yeah, we're like, wait, why is Yamaha the sponsor? But I love the part about the Right Water sponsoring it. I think that was a really good angle for them. Yeah. And obviously it makes more sense now that they obviously own Torquedo. So they have obviously Skeeter and Torquedo, and it's all just making sense for them. But
yeah,
they've done some really good job with bringing some sponsorship over to that side and what they're able to do with it. But the way it's structured is actually pretty cool. You can cherry pick like I do. I mean, I'm not to a point right now with, you know, work and schedule where I can go fish a full series. I'd love to, but you can.
I feel that feeling right here, right now. I'm the same way. Yep. It's like, man, what I would do to be able, but like, I'm also, cherry picking. I like
it. We'll get there. One of these years, but, you're allowed to, you can pick any event you want, jump in it. There's no cap as of right now. And essentially is if you want to be in the AOI race, you have to fish at least three to be entered into that. I think there's a total of five or six tournaments this year.
I'm gonna pull it
But if you finish in the top, I want to say it's either top five or top. I remember what the rule is for Bassmaster, because I qualified for the championship that's going to be in conjunction with Ray Roberts Classic next year. But I didn't even realize that I qualified. It didn't click in my head till I was literally on stage when Steve said it. So I don't know what the rule was. It wasn't on my mind all week. I was just going to fish. Like, he's like, oh, and all these guys up here, these the top five, like they're all qualified for the Bassmaster Kayak Championship next year. I'm like, oh, cool. That's, didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Go through my head. So you can like in a you can go fish one event and qualify for the championship anyway. You just can't qualify for AOI race.
Got it. Okay. So yeah, so I'm looking at the schedule now. So obviously, Lake Murray happened in February, but then it goes Ten Killer. Love that place. Cool lake. Possum Kingdom, Gunnersville, Susquehanna River, and then Caddo Lake as far as the events this year. So three out of the five to make AOIs, which you're saying. But these are open. Like this could have, there could be 300 people at a tournament. As of now, there's no cap.
There's no cap. Well, except for 10 Killer. That's their championship. That's in conjunction with Grand. So there is a cap. Oh, I think you have to qualify for that.
Sure.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it's like around 70, 80 people. It can flux a little bit. Whereas Hobie BOS, they have like a set number of like, I think it's top three for each event can qualify. But then it's like after that, they take 60 total people, I think. So then you have like a certain AOI set that can make where it's like only a top 20, top 30, something like that. But yeah, Bassmaster's pretty open-ended on that, where it's like a mix of qualification, but also like a little bit more open-ended. You know, you can, you know, your barrier to entry is pretty low because it's entry is cheaper than Hobie too. It's $250.
Okay.
So the ROI is pretty good on it.
So it's $250 entry fee on all of these. And is the championship, if you make it, no entry fee?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, you made it, so you're going to have to find that out. Yeah,
right. I've got to figure it out. I assume it would be, though. I assume it would be entry fee.
Okay. Got it. So, and then 258 guys in this last one. So like, what did First take home in that situation?
Took over $13,000.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. From a plastic boat. It's pretty damn good.
On a $250 entry fee too. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. So you're seeing that. And then, I mean, are there, I would assume, and just thinking not just from a tournament winnings perspective, but the YouTube space and the way we kind of see how different guys structure their lives as far as the ability to chase tournaments. How many guys do you feel like are chasing, you know, fishing all of these, or maybe fishing the full BOS or Hobie? Is it that season, I guess. Okay. What is like the percentage of the field of that 200 and, you know, how many guys do you feel like are roughly going to stick it out and fish a full season nationally?
I'd say percentage wise, fishing the full thing, maybe 10 to 15, maybe 20 at most.
Okay.
There's definitely people that are fishing the full schedule. I think a lot of them, though, have jobs that allow them to take that PTO to go and do that. Or maybe it's not pay time off, but it's, you know, they are at least allowed to take that vacation time to go and do that. There's some people that literally will fish all events, but they don't practice. They'll just show up on a Friday, maybe sneak in a couple hours and then just roll. And there's guys that do that and do really well, which
is, dude, isn't that crazy to me?
Yeah, it's sick.
It has made me think through some of that stuff. I think that makes you such an adaptive angler doing that. And I'm a practice guy. Like how I have learned and have, I feel like started to get better at kind of the, what I consider the minor league levels in tournament fishing, the Toyota series, that kind of level is those 3 days on the water, 2.5 days on the water, something to just find some active fish that I can go have a shot at in the tournament to do well on. But it is impressive to me when guys just roll in like that, right? It's like, oh man, I had a couple hours and got it figured out. And it's like, dude, that makes you just deadly, because then when you do have the time to practice, it just makes your decision-making faster, right? As far as like when you're in that tournament situation.
Yeah. I mean, dude, even our local circuit that I love to fish, like for me, I just, being so competitive, I need at least, like most of our local tournaments, being in Buffalo, they're always at least an hour away. So it kind of does suck to drive home the night before and then wake up earlier and drive whatever. So I always sleep in my truck at the ramp for the local stuff. I need at least like, give me an hour to just go and see what's going on.
Get a
feel for water temp, like just look at the lake. That alone just can get me down the right mindset, because you can miss out on half your tournament day just trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So there's people that when they do that, especially on the big scale, they throw $250 down to go fish and have no practice and do well. I'm just like, that's a big baller move right there. So I get impressed by that, man, where to your point, like those tournaments, I need at least 2-3 days of practice. Or like the Susquehanna River, just give me a day, because it's river fishing, man. Like, and especially that place, there's fish everywhere. So it's just a matter of just landing them. Everyone's going to run into big fish. So it's, that's another one I'm actually going to do as well. Susky, you can't miss out on that one. But
okay. And that's got to be what, a couple hours from you?
Yeah. Like, I think, so I fished the Hobie event there 2 years ago, and it was like, I'm trying to remember where bass is. I think they're going out of a similar area. I think it was like four and a half hours.
Okay. Yeah. Not bad. For where
no, not bad at all.
What you're used to driving. So are you going to try and get three in then, to try and do Angler of the Year? Is that your goal?
I want to, because I definitely am doing Susky, and obviously a third place is a great start to, you know, for AOI.
Right. Your odds. Yeah.
And then I will love to do, man, I really want to do Possum Kingdom so bad. It's just more of like, it's a 23-hour drive. Don't know if I could take the time off. So part of me thinks I might want to try to squeeze in Gunnersville, but it might be a long shot, for the fact of half the dang field that'll fish that is like home lake is Gunnersville, or they've been there 30 times and I've never been there.
Hey, that doesn't, that does. I mean, it like messes with your head a little bit, but doesn't necessarily mean all those guys look at things differently, you know, in May there. You know what? It's probably starting to get to where you see some awesome offshore stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they're starting to get out there. And I feel like that's kind of your jam. So
yeah, I'm thinking about it heavy, but I'm also like, I had the two things on my shoulder where one's like, just do it, go for it. And then one's like, you already qualified for the championship. Don't pay the travel this year. Yeah. I'm just like, how, what do I do?
I know that feeling, dude. I know that feeling.
Especially this year, man, economically just being not cheap. So it's just like, I don't know.
I get it, dude. I get it. And that's, I've been very last minute on a lot of tournament decisions this year, just because it's like, man, it just lines up. If it lines up, I'm going. If it doesn't, like, and you don't want to kind of have that excuse, I wish I had it more where it was lined out, like, I'm going no matter what. But sometimes, you know, like you said, you got to look at it economically, and it's like, got to, something work-wise that could make a lot of money, got to be a little careful about leaving that on the table to go chase you know, try and make a couple thousand bucks. But that's what I love too. So it's a tough, it's a tough battle. What about Caddo Lake in October, way down south? Thought about that at all?
I think I can make it. It's more of I still hate Caddo right now. So it strikes a nerve. Because the Hobie BOS that year, 2 years ago, was my first year really trying to go hard on the national scene. And so, like, completely overseeded my expectations. I second event, win one, and qualify for the TOC, but then also double qualify. I think going into that championship, I was like seventh AOI for that. So I double qualified for it, go to Caddo, get on something really good in practice, and then don't even catch a limit the first day, and just sucked, and went home the second day of the tournament, out of a 3-day tournament, purely just because there's no point, like, when you're in almost dead last, to fish and get in people's way. So I went home with my tail tucked and watching day three from my phone. So it was, I don't like Caddo right now in the fall. So not, I'm like, fan. Do I do that? Do I go get revenge, or do I just steer clear?
Right.
Yeah. That's a long drive too for me.
That would be a long drive too. Yeah. Oof. No doubt. I mean, I think Susky makes the most sense. Like, that totally makes sense for your wheelhouse and everything else being close to you. Just go do that one. And
just go. Oh, yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, it's got a different approach on tournament stuff here a little bit, just of trying to think through your best ROI on some of this, is like, because it's all learning and progressing. Like, that's the stuff I enjoy. And so it's like, how much of your time is better spent fishing locally sometimes, or learning how to do something, right? Like, if you are, feel like you're a little behind on the forward facing sonar trends, and you can spend a lot of time on any lake near you, I promise you there is an application for it. Whether you're fishing muddy stuff or clear water, and however those fish set up, like, you can learn just simply putting time in behind those units.
Well, and I think too, like, to that point, like, on the kayak side of things, again, we're talking ROI here, like, plastic boat, no maintenance, no gas. Like, you can make a decent amount of money locally in kayak tournaments, especially if you got states with a couple trails. Like, if you feel confident in your ability. Like, I think it's one thing too, like, if you don't feel confident, I'm not saying don't travel nationally, but, like, fish as many tournaments as you can locally, because one, your expenses will be low, but you're also fishing against good anglers. And as you start doing well more and more and more in those, maybe then make your jump, because it could make more sense for you for the national side. But, like, you can make decent money locally. I mean, I made more money locally than I did nationally last year. That's for damn sure.
Dude, that's always the joke and debate we have. Tournament fishing too with buddies, it's like, okay, like, you know, talk about how much you spend once you start adding expenses, boat gas, truck gas, all that stuff. It's kind of a tough argument. It starts, you know, everyone likes to talk about that. Oh, I cashed a $9,000 check. Well, it's like, man, that's great, but you spent four to get there. Like, you know, no one likes to talk about the expenses side, which I get. Like, you always like talking about the winning side, and I'm the same way, but it is, you're dead on when those couple hundred dollar or $1,000 checks close to home sometimes are a little more efficient when it comes to all this, but it's chasing it, right? Like, it's fun to go fish new places.
Oh yeah. 100%. And that was purely my motivations for this year, where it's like, I wasn't chasing anything. I just wanted to go fish new lakes. And that's the whole thing where I talk about, like, the cherry picking for schedule. That is awesome for anglers, where it's like, you've never been to Santee Cooper. Like, yeah, it's a tournament. It's another reason to go do it. But, like, it gives you a reason to go explore a new place. You know, that's what I find the enjoyment first and foremost, beyond just the competitive side, where I love that, where it's, this year is kind of cool for me. Like, I can tell I'm developing mentally as an angler, where I went into Murray like in past years where it's like, man, I have expectations of myself. I can't, the whole fear of failure thing. But I went into it so calm this year, like in the Murray event. I'm like, I don't care. Like if I bomb, I bomb, like whatever. Like if I'm just exploring this place, that's my first priority, just have fun. And was like, obviously I'm competitive once it comes to tournament day, but like at the end of the day, like if I don't have a limit, like, whatever, I don't really care.
And got to come fishing really place, yeah. Hang out with some friends, see some people.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I think that's a much better approach. And I agree. Like I've felt myself start to turn that way with things too. It's like, yeah. And sometimes like, man, Toyota Series is an $1,800 entry fee. It's like, you know, it's throwing some dollars around, but like I fish a lot better when I'm there for the right reason rather than being little tightly wound. Sometimes I feel like I do better when I'm like, man, I'm getting to fish freaking Clear Lake or the Delta or Havasu, just some unique place that is, that I cherish. And so I'm with you. Totally, totally understand that perspective. Mm-hmm. And so these guys that maybe the 10, 15% that are chasing this more so on a full-time perspective, right? Like there's not probably enough meat on the bone just in tournament winnings, kind of the same way in the boat world. Just the differences in the boat world, right? It's your expenses are so much more. There's a lot more dollars on a paycheck per se, but your expenses are so much higher. But on this, like, are they monetizing it through YouTube? Some of these guys that are like more so true full time, or is it guys like you're saying that have that ability to do the job thing, right? Which I think is a great approach. I think that approach needs to be looked at more in tournament fishing in general. If, like, this is your passion, like there's a lot of situations I think career wise to kind of get yourself set up to be able to do that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of the percentage that can fish all of them that are doing that. Like it's whether it's your, you know, alignment where it's 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off type of deal, like that you're able to fit in the schedule. Mm-hmm. Or
pilots, right? Like pilots seem to have that fire guy. Yeah. Like there's a lot of guys out west, tournament guys that are firemen, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole handful of different occupations you can do it with. So I think there's the majority of them doing that. But there are a few that are doing this full time. But I can guarantee they're not doing it off of winnings. I strongly think you cannot do that on the kayak side unless you're literally no electronics, living out of a van and eating, you know, pasta for every meal. So it's
ramen,
like
just ramen,
yeah,
ramen
van life. Straight ramen. Because like, I mean, looking at it, 13 grand is a great payout from a kayak side. But if you want to be able to afford all your expenses, don't have like sponsors backing you or anything like that, like, you're going to win. You got to go and win like 8-9 tournaments just to make close to 75-80K. And then on top of that, then you have expenses, and it's, you can't do it on the kayak side, at least in my personal opinion. I don't think you can. And the small number of people that are doing it are, have big sponsor backing, have the YouTube and social media thing going. And like the way they're looking at it, these kayak tournaments, as they're already hammers and they're doing well. So like the winnings is just a bonus. Like that's, they're, to my knowledge, they're saving these, and like they're going into these tournaments is like, I'm going to be making money on this event already simply because I'm filming this and I'm turning it into content. Where, you know, if they, you know, then if they go and they win, it's like, well, that's great. I got an extra 10 grand bonus today. Like it's, you know, so there's a small handful of people that are doing it. I think honestly, I could probably count on two hands, maybe. Might even only be one hand that are people that are doing it on the kayak side. But it's, I think it's growing. Like I think it's getting there. Cause I see a bunch of people in the space that are, one, working on their personal brands, which the sport needs, cause that's obviously going to bring eyes. You got some of your leaders that are doing it, like a Christine Fisher, that are as great on the content side, but it's also fishing like every single tournament she can. But the more people do that, you know, growing their brand in the kayak space, the more eyes there's going to come brand wise to the kayak space. So that's going to bring some more notoriety. The more that, you know, like Steve Owens and Bassmaster puts into these tournaments, the more eyes are going to come on to these. And I think finally we're getting there, that the kayak fishing space is starting to stop marketing only to the anglers fishing their tournament and start marketing to people actually watching and keeping up with the tournament. I think your biggest boom will be once we finally can get someone that's willing to incorporate some live streaming to kayak fishing.
Wow, that would be neat. How do you anticipate something like that happening? Like follow boat, like bass boats following kayak guys, or what would you?
Honestly, I think
another kayak.
I think it'd be another kayak. I think that's your best way of doing it. Because I feel like,
because then you go back into somewhere.
Some of the things these guys can do, like if you just get a guy that's willing to be like, yeah, you can follow me. I don't care if my stuff gets exposed or whatever. Like you follow him into that. I feel like that's the way to do it personally. I feel like you can follow him and live stream from there. I think that is the biggest next step for kayak fishing. If we're going to want to take the tournament side, at least to the next level.
Yeah.
But they're starting to finally like market, like, hey, there's people watching this event, or at least keeping tabs on, guys that, they're keeping tabs on Tourney X, which is like the standings, and they're posting about it and they're keeping up and there's discussions made. Once they realize, hey, we should market to those folks, not the 200 people already paying us to fish this event.
Right.
Like, that was the biggest hint. I think the biggest pain point for marketability on the kayak side was like all these trails were only marketing to the people fishing their event. Mm-hmm. Which keeps you very limited, like what people are doing. And they're starting to invest in the anglers that are actually in those trails, which I was a big advocate for, where it's like, take six people or so that are fishing your trail heavy and do content around them. Give people that are watching the event that aren't traveling and fishing these events a name to follow. Because mm-hmm. once you can keep that name there, then they associate to that brand. And it helps the trail, it helps the anglers, and then it obviously all comes full circle, and we'll have more money flooding towards the kayak side of things. And I think more, not too much, but more so than the boat side, the kayak side can attract some more non-endemics, just in regards to the different things that we're doing. And it's a little bit more of like a physically active, and of course you can apply it to the boat side, but I still think that the kayak side of things has the more ability from a non-endemic side to be attached to it.
Well, and it's just a newer, I mean, we've seen the non-endemic attempts on the boat side for a long time, and there's been some great ones, and there still are some great ones, but it just seems like they always are there for a couple of years and then they leave. And maybe that is how those non-endemics kind of do their sponsor stuff anyways. And maybe that's something like, 'cause I've always viewed it as a little bit of a negative in the fishing industry. I feel like we can't hold on to some of these big non-endemics, like the Walmarts, like some of these things. And maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way. And it's like, well, that's how these big brands operate. Like they go into an industry, they flood it, they throw a lot of dollars at it. And then maybe they go to the next industry, or they figure out, and it has to be dollars and stuff that makes sense. But I don't know. I'd like to compare it to other industries and think through, like, do we see, I don't know, for bull riding or something, bowling, something that we could compare to fishing, do those non-endemics stick around, or are they rotating as well? And maybe we're being a little too hard on, and we just need to be more aggressive about finding the next one. I don't know. Just trying to think through the non-endemic stuff, because it's always been something super frustrating to me, because we all fight over these dollars that are in-house, and it's like, man, there's a lot more dollars out of the house than there are in the house.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think there's a mix of it, because like in the sport realm, which I stay pretty tapped into, like it's what I went to school for, you see a lot of changing and turnover with brands that are sponsoring certain things. So I think there's a mix of that, but I also think there's a couple things that you could factor into there, like Black Rifle Coffee. I think they've turned themselves into an endemic, but I think from the beginning, they definitely seemed like a non-endemic, being a coffee brand.
Why do you think they turned themselves into an endemic, I guess?
I think because they realize how much outdoorsmen, not even just fishing, but fishing and hunting, are like the only reason we can operate is on coffee. And with their military background and outdoors, like it goes hand in hand. I think that they realize they can conquer that space. So I think they're a great example. But I think like a Walmart, they threw a lot of money at
the FLW days, like the early FLW days. It was like Walmart everything.
Huge money. And I think, I don't know if it was just like a marketing thing for them, or if it was like they were just like a marketing expense to help with tax. I mean, that's a way above my pay grade. But I also think when I'm like at Walmart, I'm looking at, hey, my number one thing I'm selling is an ugly stick. and we're talking about tournament fishing right now. Right. I think we're going after the wrong people here, but again, I could be totally way off with that. So it's, I think some dip their toes in, and it's, I think it's a matter of like, hey, we're going to come and spend money here for 2-3 years and then
like go off
great. You know, if not, whatever, like, you know, right. then they're going to back out. So I don't know. I think there's like these bigger non-endemic companies go in cycles, where you look at like, I think you could use like Celsius as a case study where they dip into different sports year for a couple of years, take it out, go spend money in a different thing, take it out, go spend it. That way they're like dipping their toes in everything. So they're getting some different visibility. And if something catches fire, they'll remain there, but they're going to throw money at everything.
Well, I think part of that strategy too, just thinking from the marketing perspective, may be of like, okay, think about it with anything. You get your biggest bang for your buck on the initial go, right? Like you're going to hit that audience, the bass fishing audience, in that first window of like throwing money at it and seeing what kind of sticks. But then, you know, you could either stay in this space and keep spending dollars, or you go to the next one, the next niche sport or whatever you want to call it, and next audience, and then like, boom, throw dollars into this one. And there's going to be naturally some carryover of people in the fishing industry that saw Celsius per se. And now Celsius may be out of the fishing industry, but they still like the drink or whatever it is, right? So like, I think that you see some of that now. I think there's also some value in brands that stay in the industry, like Black Rifle Coffee. I drink Black Rifle Coffee because of it. They support the industry, right? Like there's stuff like that too, of that brand awareness and like that continual thing. But I think that the biggest pop, I guess the moral of this is in that beginning, that initial push to that audience.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think that's what a lot of brands are finding success with. Like I think Black Rifle could pull out completely and go sponsor only bull riding, and anglers would still be drinking Black Rifle Coffee.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah. I think kayak fishing needs some of that. And I think that we're on the right path there. I could see in 4 or 5 years, we, and this is me, you know, making a prediction of hopefulness that I hope to see on this side. Sure. But I could see 4 or 5 years of having 2 to 3 different live stream cameras for the kayak side, potentially live streaming to like a Bassmaster YouTube page. And there being one big non-endemic sponsor that enters the kayak fishing space.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Like I could see like brands like a REI or something like that. That's like the amount of people that go and, I mean, I got buddies that tournament fish across the country and they go and they just set up their, a hammock. And that's like they don't bring any batteries or nothing because they don't fish with electronics. They just set up their hammock, sleep at the ramp or a local campsite for $20 a night. And that's it. So like I could see brands like that kind of stepping in and being a cool part of that. Cause there's a lot of that. Airbnbs aren't like a big thing in the kayak space. I mean, there's definitely a good amount of people that will stay there, but a lot of people camp, a lot of people sleep in their trucks. That's a big thing on the kayak side. And not that there isn't on the boat side, but there's definitely more to that, the kayak fishing space.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest challenge on the boat side, right, is just electricity. But that being said, I mean, dude, I'm a huge proponent of camping, topper setup. I mean, staying, there's something to be said for staying at the ramp. Like that is huge to me, to not have to figure out how to get to the boat ramp and this and that. And like, and then I do enjoy, and from a cost perspective too, there are times when I enjoy doing an Airbnb or something because it's with a group of guys, right? And we're cooking and there's that happening, that socialization that's also happening during the tournament. We're all here to compete in this, but it's like, man, it's fun. You get to have a couple of beers with the guys and talk fishing. And so like there's some of that too, but you can do that camping. And a lot of the times anymore, I'm sleeping in the back of the truck somewhere. And it's also super nice for on the way back, you can pull off on the side of the road and crash.
Yeah. I'm big on that too. But like if I'm going to a tournament and the night temps are sub freezing, I'm typically getting an Airbnb or something like that. I could do it for one night. If it's one night, I'll sleep in my truck, that's fine. But like multiple nights, it's honestly becomes like a health thing. Like it's just not good to sleep and stuff like that. No. But yeah, dude, like for me, like at least on the local side, and I did a few national tournaments last year, big on the camping thing. You know, that's I'm all about that because I feel like you're a little bit more in tune than you would be at an Airbnb. Usually I don't like to, I've learned through a couple different situations so far in the past few years that staying with more people does not do well for me.
Yeah, I struggle with that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we've got 10 minutes or so here to wrap things up. My biggest question is, you always hear, and this has been like the buzz of the last, especially during COVID. I mean, we saw a blow up in everything outdoors and fishing in general, but like you see, you always hear like kayak fishing is becoming more and more popular. It's growing, it's growing, it's growing. Like, do you feel like kayak fishing is truly still growing from a tournament perspective, or is it kind of flatlining more so? What's kind of your take on the overall?
I think overall kayak fishing is growing extremely fast. I think the tournament still fishing is, I think it's still growing a little bit, but because of the whole economic deal this year, I think it's kind of flatlined a little bit in regards to at least participation. But I think overall, like in just someone going to buy a kayak and going fishing, I think that's still exploding because your barrier to entry is so small, where you might have somebody that might want to get a boat, but they look at the cost right now and everything, and then current state and how much gas is, they're like, at least in the meantime, maybe I'll buy a boat in 3 years or next year or whatever, but they're going to get a kayak now as a means of going fishing with their kid or getting out on the weekend, things like that. I think that itself is why kayak fishing is so popular, is for the barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so inexpensive. You can make it what you want. I think that is going to continue to be big. You're seeing sales blowing up along that side. Like, these brands are doing pretty well in regards to some of those kayaks that are within like the 1,000 to 3,000 range. I'd love to see the numbers of like a Walmart would do on some of their $200 kayaks, because there's a bunch of people that get those little Sun Dolphins and throw one rod in and slap it down the ramp, not giving a crap about it, and go plug in at a local pond. Like,
yeah,
that's the biggest part of kayak fishing. I think the tournament side is, I like the boat side. I mean, it's such a small side, but
actual amount of people. Right.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's going to continue to do that, man. I think it's going to get more popular as times get tough for people.
Dude, I think that's a valid point. Is, I think that you're going to continue to see maybe cheaper recreation items, right? And in that realm of things, kayaks line up with that. I think the other thing to me, at least something that you're seeing out west, is having some conversations with some big fly fishing guys yesterday, and one of them specifically was talking about how they've started chasing walleye and going crappie fishing and doing these things because the rivers around here are just getting overrun with right, like, guys doing that, because 20 years ago, no one was fly fishing these rivers, and now everyone is. And so they're like, man, I want to go find stuff that no one else is doing. Well, kayak's another way to do that, like going into places where there's just less pressure and getting away, I guess, more than anything, because that's something I think we all enjoy in fishing, at whether that be tournament fishing or fun fishing. It's really fun to be on those places. There's a mystique and allure to me to exploring a new place that where there's not anyone or anything. Like, that is one of the like fun things, and I really appreciate that about Western fisheries, because there's just not, some of these lakes, there's just not people around, and you can go places in the desert, right, in Arizona and Nevada on Lake Mead, where you're like, man, I am in the boonies, or in some of these places in Idaho, and it's like, gotta be a little careful in some of those situations. And that happens all across the country too, definitely in some of those big bodies in the southeast. But that's a fun part of fishing, and I think kayaks opens that up even more to more bodies of water than you ever could on a boat.
Well, I think, you know, 99% of anglers that are passionate about it, that's the original reason they got into it. The unknown, the go fish a brand new fishery, place you've never been before, places you never made a cast. Like, that's the whole thing I love about it. And thankfully, in New York here, we got a couple different lakes that are run that are 9.9 or lower. So you can't get any of that traffic, and there's no houses on the lake. And we have a couple place, little reservoirs that are kayak only. They don't allow any motors whatsoever. I can't even bring like my Torquedo out, which is perfect. Like, it's awesome. Like, places you can go plug in that, you know, at least right now, most of I've ever seen is one dude in a Sun Dolphin throwing a wacky rig on a 6-aught flipping hook. So all the fish are really dumb. So like, you can go there and just wreck them. So there's a bunch of places around there. Like if you do your Google Map research, there's some places you can get into, and that's just like your pure, you know, original, you know, early angler instinct of just go explore. You know, I think some people need some more of that these days versus getting online and complaining about something about fishing.
Oh, dude, I'm with you. And something too, it's like, I think as we get older and just are more tied into commitments and work and everything else and the podcast, it's just like another thing to keep in mind always, I think, is like I catch myself sometimes like watching pro fishing, right, and enjoying it, and I do when I'm home, like, and I really enjoy watching all this stuff and the coverage of tournaments, but it's like, man, you know, you got to be careful in your mind. I think sometimes it tricks yourself. You're like, oh, you're enjoying this and it's fun, but it's like, man, there's still be nothing like going and doing it, right? Like I don't know, sometimes like you catch yourself up thinking about watching this tournament and everything else, it's like, dude, I need to be on the water, like what am I doing? And then you go out and it's all great, but like that barrier of like, oh, I gotta go pack all the stuff on the boat, I gotta drive over here, it's like, no dude, it's a reason we got into this stuff.
Yeah go do it, man. It's the adventure in itself. Like you just gotta do it.
Yeah
you can't lose that sense, because then, you know, you won't just enjoy the feeling of fishing again.
Right.
Like, it never gets old for me. There was one time that still rings in my head where there was one of the lakes that I was fishing was one of those ones that I was telling you, 9 or lower. And there was this elderly gentleman said he's been fishing this lake for 20, 30 years, been fishing his whole life. And man, this dude, like he's probably in his mid 60s or so. And he's like giggling, catching this 2-pounder. And I'm like, if I'm not that way when I'm his age, then I failed. Like
right.
I was genuinely smiling and like laughing with this guy catching a 2-pounder near me. Like those are some of the things I live for. Screw tournament fishing. Like that is the only reason I want to fish is right. Being 50 yards from somebody else catching fish. And we're just laughing because we have pure enjoyment. Whereas there's too much of this bickering crap nowadays.
So, dead on. And I totally agree. And I think that, got to get back to thinking some of that stuff through. And when you see that, like you gotta, those moments kind of stick out. So appreciate you bringing that to the forefront.
Yeah, man.
Well, awesome. Well, dude, I appreciate it. It was good catching up with you and talking kayak stuff. Something I don't do enough of understanding and learning some of this stuff. So I appreciate that. And hopefully the audience appreciates that take. It's good to have you on Business from the Bass Boat. It's been a minute.
Yeah, man.
Man, any last words, anything coming serious angler-wise this upcoming week that we need to be aware of?
I'd say upcoming, obviously, we always have our Tuesday night lives. We got a pretty cool show lined up. This past week, actually, we had Kyle Patrick and Wesley Gore, who are Elite Series rookies that both got a century belt at Fork. Had those boys on to chat because they're actually rooming with each other. It was actually kind of cool to see them bickering as roommates. So we had some fun.
I love it.
And then we had Andrew Hayes from Tackle Talk Podcast and Trevor Lowe from Omnia, and had some fun with our part two of the show, the Fish It, Box It, or Trash It that we did. So that was a good time. And I'll say too, you know, in talking about kayak fishing, check out our show on the network, Kayak Fishing Weekly. Justin Largent, who has been hosting that and been running and doing a great job, had Jake, who actually won that Murray event. No sonar, no motor, nothing. He had him on the show this week, so you guys can go check out that. And he was yo-yoing a 3/4-ounce jackhammer. That's how he was catching some of his bigger fish. And I was like, yes, that is awesome. Because I'm sitting here, 6-pound test and a freaking underspin. This dude's throwing 20-pound tests and a big jackhammer. I'm like, yes, you are winning, sir.
You are winning. I love it. Awesome, dude. Well, thanks for coming on. And I can't wait too for our next fantasy fishing show talking about the classic. That's another big thing coming up here.
Hell yeah.
So, all right, buddy. Well, you have a great rest of your day. Appreciate you.
Love you, man.
Peace. Right, see ya.